You may think of yourself as a specific type of writer, and maybe you're way better at doing something else. So I would say don't give up and be open to what you're really good at.
Welcome to Angle on Writing, a podcast about writing, publishing, and book marketing. Welcome, writers. Today, I am with a very accomplished poet, novelist, playwright, writing instructor. Welcome, David Starkey.
Well, Lisa, it's great to see you. You and I have known each other for many, many years, and I'm happy to be on your podcast.
Well, welcome. Why don't you let people know, when did you know you were a writer?
Well, that's a good question. I think that was probably in high school. I had my grandfather had given me an old Royal typewriter with the, ribbons that smudged and ran out of ink and stuff like that. And I would sit down and write stories in my early high school years. And that was it. I just thought, well, I want to be a writer. And I never really veered from that course. I just kept going. I was a creative writing major at UC Davis. And then I did do some I got my MA at UCLA, and I was kind of trying to shift towards academic work because I thought that might be a better way to get a job. But I ended up finishing that degree and then going on to Louisiana State University to get an MFA. And so that's where I focused on poetry, and that kind of led me around the country. I had a job in South Carolina and then one in the Chicago suburbs. And then I ended up back in my home state of California.
So you primarily focused on poetry when you first began.
I wanted to be a fiction writer initially. And it wasn't until I was at UCLA and I was rooming with a poet. And he said, "Why don't you try writing some poetry?" So I wrote a poem about the Partridge Family. Do you remember that show?
Oh, yes. Yes.
And I wrote a poem about Danny Bonaducci, who wasn't yet like a talk show person or a personality. He was just this lost individual. And one of the key lines in it was, "Did you ever learn to play that bass guitar?" Because he was always faking it. And so that's in a way kind of been a through line for my career, as I've always been writing about music because I was in, garage bands since when I was a high school kid. And my two novels are about musicians, and I just finished writing a book about Bruce Springsteen this year and one about the Talking Heads the year before. That's something I like to write about. I like to write about music.
And you play. Are you playing? Do you play in a band
Yeah,
these
well,
days?
I'm in a bar band called Peer Pressure. That's named after the guy who gets us all our gigs is named Peer. So it's Peer Pressure. And yeah, we play once or twice a month around town. So it's not that hard to see me out there playing either the guitar or the bass, singing a few songs. So yeah.
So do you write songs at all?
I do. Another friend and I have a little kind of just the two of us, a band called Falstaff Riley that we've have a number of albums actually out, like on Apple Music and stuff like that. They're very small, in-house sort of things, but that's a lot of fun, is writing your own music and lyrics and collaborating with somebody else. I've always enjoyed that.
So when you're a writer and you have to pay the bills and make the money, I guess one of the things that a writer can do is to go into teaching. So is that
Right.
kind of how
Yeah.
you led you into that?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's been my main source of income. And also, I wrote a creative writing textbook. Golly, it's probably been about 12 or 13 years ago that it came out. No, more like 17 years. Anyway, that's kind of been my secondary source of income. It's typically the most used creative writing textbook in North America. That's been a real godsend for me.
So is that available? Is it available locally and on Amazon?
Yeah, you can, normally people buy it because their teacher assigned it in their creative writing class at college or university. But yeah, you can buy it anywhere. So, go on out there and pick it up a copy.
And are you going to be updating it at all? Do you need think
Yeah,
you need
so
to update it?
it's in its fourth edition right now. So, textbook publishers are a lot more kind of conservative about when they update books now, just because it's so expensive to pay royalties to. I have a bunch of examples of by writers in there, and then they obviously all have to be paid. But yeah, who knows? It could go into a fifth edition. I was really happy. The fourth edition is like for textbooks. That means you've made it. So that's where I am right now.
And so nonfiction writer is another one of your titles. I didn't realize that you had written books about Springsteen and the Talking Heads.
Yeah. That just sort of I had always, like I said, always been writing about music, but I hadn't really written anything that long about a single group. And it's with this series that you can get through Simon and Schuster called On Track. And basically it looks at all the songs made by a particular group. So I went through all the songs Talking Heads made. They have a relatively small catalog and broke up after a certain number of albums. And then the Springsteen book is from his first album up to Tunnel of Love, which is in 1987. And he has a huge catalog, so it's hard to hard to keep up with the boss.
And so how did that come about that you got to write those? Did you have to do a proposal or did they come to you or how did
Yeah,
that
no, I
happen?
had seen some of them around and I thought, oh, that might be something that would be fun to do. So yeah, I sent them a proposal and there are a lot of books already in their catalog. So there weren't necessarily a lot of people that I would want to write about or that they would want me to write about that could sell copies, but Talking Heads happened to be open. And when I finished that one, I was really surprised that no one had written about Springsteen, who's one of the biggest selling artists kind of all time. So that was a coup for me, I think.
So and you've also written novels. How did you finally got back into novel writing after
Yeah, after
how long
what,
years?
50 years? Yeah, I had wanted to, I mean, I've written short stories over the course of my career, and I had written a couple of novels that didn't get published. You know what that's like. You put a lot of work into something and then you can't find an audience for it. And then I lucked out with this novel called Poor Ghosts, which is about a rock band that basically their plane crashes in what seems a lot like my own backyard. And then the novel that I have out now is about two brothers who are kind of washed up folk musicians going around Japan trying to resurrect their careers. So that's my subject matter so far.
And how did you go about getting those published?
Well, that was hard. I didn't have an agent because when you have a textbook, you don't need an agent, but it's also a little bit dicey if you do get one because an agent will typically want to take the proceeds from your entire body of work. And since that's my main alternate source of income, I was kind of hesitant to do that. I just lucked into a place, Turner Publishing, that will look at books by people who don't have agents, and they published both the books.
So if people are just starting out right now, when you look back on you were in college and you wanted to write
Right.
novels and you wanted to write and then you'd gotten to poetry and this kind of stuff. If you've got these younger people right now thinking that they want to write a novel, they want to start publishing short stories, or what advice would you give to those younger people? Like you would give maybe to your younger self.
My younger self, I think it's just don't give up, and I think you have to decide that you have a passion for it that's going to make sure that you don't give up. I think it's important to kind of find what you do best. So, like I said, I started off as a fiction writer. I realized that for a while, at least, maybe I was a better poet. And so then I was willing to kind of put that to the side, fiction writing, invest myself in poetry. And then I realized I kind of had a knack for explaining things to people. And so I wrote textbooks. But I think it's just being open to all the different ways that you can express yourself. You may think of yourself as a specific type of writer, and maybe you're way better at doing something else. So I would say don't give up and be open to what you're really good at.
Well, you must have been a really good poet because, well, I have heard some of your poetry and I do love it, but you were the Santa Barbara Poet Laureate for a couple of years, 2009 to 2011.
Right.
And I spoke with Perry Longo a couple of weeks ago, and one of the questions I asked her is, I know that poet laureates are always called upon to write poems about every little thing,
Right.
and how did you approach that?
Well, I think probably the hardest poem you have to write is the one when you are it's called installed at the very beginning, and you speak it to the city council. So you're kind of trying to summarize your aesthetic and how you are connected with local politics or could be world politics. That's a tough one. But then afterwards, one of the things that I did, and you and I both have a connection to what's now called TVSB, we used to call it the channels back then, was I was able to do these video poems. And the poems I wrote about were ideas that were suggested by community members. And so, like my friend Chris Yost, also a poet laureate, she thinks her best poem that she wrote was about the new water treatment plant. I think that probably the best poems I wrote are in this, it's called Poems for Santa Barbara, and you can find it on YouTube. And I wrote a poem that was suggested by Melinda Palacio, who also became a poet laureate herself later on. She said to write a poem about La Barda. This is the wall, not too far off of, it's on Yannanoli Street, and what is it? I guess Garden. And it's where mostly Hispanic workers line up waiting for day labor. And so that was interesting to do. And I did that with our old colleague, Jesus Estrada. And so I wrote my poem, and then I would speak a stanza, and then he would speak the stanza back in Spanish. So that was an interesting way to kind of look at something that was maybe a little bit outside of my own experience.
That sounds like a very interesting, trigger for writing poetry and stuff. What other kinds of advice do you have for people who are just starting out writing poetry, since it is
Right.
National Poetry Month still?
It is, yeah. Well, I mean, I think going to something like the Santa Barbara Writers Conference is a great idea. I think going to local readings, there's a lot of them around in our town of Santa Barbara. Oftentimes there's an open mic at the end. That's especially the case if you're willing to drive down to Ventura. And so you have that chance to go up and take that poem that you've been working on and you just want to have an audience and to read it out loud. I think that's a really important step for poets, is to think that the poems I write aren't just for me or my friends, but for people I don't know. And how are they going to respond to it? And that's maybe one of the biggest things I learned in my 30 plus years of teaching poetry, is that it can be hard to let the poem out of your own control and let other people kind of have at it. That can be intimidating, but I think it's necessary if you're going to take the next step into being a poet.
Yeah, that's one of the hard things about being a writer,
Yeah.
whether it's poetry or any type of prose, is writing it, but then also putting it out there and letting it go out into the world
Yeah.
and being kind of on edge to wonder what are people going to think about it?
Yeah, that is scary, and that you don't really have any control at that point. That I think that's one of the arguments for making every piece of writing that you do decide to let go as good as it can be. And I think one of the ways that that happens is by letting other people put eyes on it. You can trust your own judgment up to a certain point, but it's good to have feedback from people who aren't invested in the piece and can say, "Oh, this is really good," or "You lost me completely here," or "I'm not sure this part is working." I think that's, every writer needs that. And I think most writers find typically a group of friends, and it's a reciprocal process, right? If I'm gonna ask you, Lisa, to read my story, then I better be willing to read your story in return.
Yeah, and this is that's a great you mentioned before the Santa Barbara Writers Conference, which will be coming up in June, and that is a good place for people to do that if they need people from not just California, but people come from all over the place
Right.
and make new friends and that are writers and get to know other writers and be able to get them to collaborate before they go out and submit. But then once people have gotten something that they're proud of and they put together and they even publish a book and
Right.
like all the beautiful books that you have behind you, which are real,
Those are real, yeah.
yes, opposed to mine, which because my books are scattered all over the place here. So, but so. The other thing I know you do is you write book reviews.
I do.
So, how do you go about choosing what it's because there's so many books today being published all the time now. How do you choose what books to review?
Yeah, I mean, that is a really good question. I am with Brian Tanguy, the co-editor of the California Review of Books. And as you may know, we've allowed the Independent to republish our reviews once they come out. So they get sort of a double life, which is nice. But how we choose them, I mean, I probably get pitched anywhere from 5 to 10 books a day. From publishers, from authors, from marketing folks. And I have to say that most people never hear back from me. It's just too overwhelming to have to say to every person, "I don't, your book doesn't look that interesting to me," and you don't want to say that anyway. I think Brian and I have mostly decided that we are looking to review books that we like. And so as someone who has received a bad review or two in my time, I know not only does that hurt, but it kind of sticks around a little bit too. So unless someone is like really famous and we feel like and they're not that good and we need to let the wind out of their sails a bit, we mostly just focus on that. We have two really devoted reviewers. George Yacheson, who is the poet laureate of Santa Barbara right now, and Walter Cummings, who's a retired professor in New Jersey, are really regular reviewers for the California Review of Books. So that helps to kind of widen the door a little bit for the books that are going to be reviewed. For the ones that I choose, I mean, I like certain types of things. I like poetry, I like literary fiction. I'm not going to be a great reviewer for romanticy, for instance. That's a very popular type of book, and if we were reviewing romanticies, we'd probably get a lot more hits on our site. But we don't do that. Brian reviews a lot of political and historical books, and we both have a really kind of left-leaning political bias, so that's going to come out. So we would be unlikely to review the new book by J.D. Vance that just appeared. I mean, I guess we could give it a bad review, but again, that's not really what we're about. So yeah, it's hard. And as you say, I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds of books coming out probably every day, and it's hard as a fellow author to get a pitch from someone who seems sincere and whose book might or might not be pretty good, but you know you have a stack of 10 books just to the left of your computer waiting to be reviewed, and you don't want to take on something that you can't finish.
Well, the one genre that we have not touched on that you have been involved in is you have written some plays as well, haven't you?
I have, yeah. I wrote quite a few plays in the 2000s. Like around 2003 to maybe 2010 or something like that. And they were produced all around the country. I got a kick out of that, especially if I had a chance to go see the production in Chicago or Seattle or wherever. But it's a rough game because there's not a lot of money in it. You put a lot of work into it. And I wrote a play that I thought was really good, and I thought, oh, this is a play that's going to kind of break me out and get me some more national attention. And it didn't do that, and I just thought, I'm gonna give up. I'm gonna try something else. I was talking about that as one of my go-to strategies. And then recently, I interviewed on the creative community. Meg, the woman who runs Moore Theater, Santa Barbara, and she and I both had an idea that it would be fun to do a play in the interview space where I've done, so many hundreds of interviews. And so that is my most recent work that was actually performed at the DBSP studios, last month or a couple months ago.
Oh, that's right. That's true. I saw that. Now I remember I did see that.
Yeah, it was a kick to have the audience members were as though they were the audience members on this TV show that was taking place.
Yeah. So is that going to be produced again? Because I know I missed
I
that. I don't remember
yeah,
why,
I
but.
think it was I think I hope it was videotaped. I was out of town for most of the run, but I was there for the opening night, and I think that they were planning on taping it. So hopefully they can air it on TVSB, and people can take a peek who missed it the first time around.
So you had that you thought that you were done with the play writing, and then it came back and bit you again, huh?
Yeah. Well, it's a lot of fun. I mean, I think, like I said, every writer has got their strengths. I think one of mine is writing dialogue. So, since plays are mostly dialogue, that was a genre that I felt like I did pretty well in. And yeah, if something else came up, I would be interested in doing that. I have some other book projects right now. I'm working on a book about my parents' time in assisted living, and the years leading up to their deaths, and trying not to make that too depressing. And but that's it's a real serious subject. I think I will probably write a book about Johnny Cash for that same series for his American recordings, the last recordings he did in his life. I'm doing another one where I'm kind of doing a retrospective on myself as a teacher and a creative writer. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm sitting here at this desk that you can't quite see most of the day, just tippy tapping away on the old keyboard.
Wow. Well, that's what all our writers really need is we need that butt glue to be able
Right.
to stick in our
We
chairs
do.
and do that. So
Yeah.
congratulations on doing that.
Yeah. Thank you, Lisa.
Well, thank you so much for all the writer encouragement and everything that you have provided today and always.
Well, it's a pleasure, and I would say to all the writers out there listening is just persist. And again, be open to maybe trying something new, something that you don't know you're good at until you've tried it.
Well, thank you, and until I see you again.